Welcome to the new season of Death Becomes Her, the podcast where we explore death, dying, and grief from a variety of angles. I'm your host, Layla Kelly. You may have noticed that I have been quite irregular in creating new episodes for the podcast. Death Becomes Her is my passion project. It's a way for me to be able to research all sorts of quirky little stories that I find interesting surrounding death and dying, and I get to share them with you. If you've been a regular listener, you know that my friend Kelly was the big push behind me creating this podcast, and she was definitely my biggest fan. And when she died last December, I would have to say that I felt like a lot of my passion just died with her. But now that it's been a little bit of time, it's been about 10 months, I can say that I wouldn't say that my passion died, but that maybe it was more, I guess, a bit dormant would be the word to use. So I am not going to guarantee that I am going to be back with nice regular episodes, but I can say that there will definitely be more episodes in the future. So just a quick thank you for sticking with me. With that housekeeping done and dusted, let's dive into the history of a long forgotten tradition, Sin Eaters. What exactly is a sin eater? Well, we are going to answer that question by taking a little journey back in time. And along the way, we're going to examine not only what a sin eater's role was in their community, but because I like to give things a little bit of a modern twist, we're going to bring it full circle. And we're also going to talk about legacy. And just to keep things interesting, I'm going to share a little bit of a personal insight into how my work as a death doula ties into this tradition. So without further ado, what is a sin eater? The basic concept is really quite simple. And this is something that was most common in rural parts of the British Isles. So like England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland. And in those places, a sin eater was a person who through a ritualistic act would symbolically take on the sins of the recently deceased. This sounds like something that would be a myth or a legend, but this is actually a very real practice, the goal of which was to ensure that the dead could pass on to the afterlife without the burden of any of their misdeeds weighing them down. And this was a particularly important ritual in communities where, for whatever reason, the access to clergy was limited. So the act of absolving someone's sins through last rites wasn't possible. That is where the sin eater came into play. And the ritual itself that they adhered to, it wasn't complicated at all, but it was solemn. So typically what would happen is the sin eater would be called to the home of a deceased person. There would be a simple meal made of bread or something absorbent like cake and maybe some ale. And the bread and the cake would be placed on the chest of the corpse. The sin eater would then come and eat that food, and that symbolized that they were taking on the sins of the dead person. And in return for this service that they performed, the sin eater was paid, of course, with that small meal, but also a small fee. But that fee would have only been a token gesture when you consider that there was such a heavy spiritual burden that the sin eater was taking on. Because once that meal was eaten, it was then believed that that sin eater had absorbed the sins of the deceased. They had taken on that entire burden. So while the deceased could now move on to the afterlife without the weight of their sins, the soul of the sin eater grew heavier and heavier with each ritual that he performed. And this, of course, took its toll on the sin eater's station in his community. The role was seen as necessary, but it was also something to be feared. People believed that the sin eaters, they were tainted because they had consumed the sins of others. So they were social outcasts and they were shunned by the very same communities that they served. Catherine Sinclair was an early 19th century writer, and she described sin eaters as infidels. And she likened them to the biblical Esau, who was infamous for selling his birthright for a simple bowl of stew. her words show that these people were seen as spiritually lost. They were willing to take on damnation for their survival in the here and now. So why would a person choose to take on this role as a sin eater? Clearly, it was one of isolation. Well, likely you've already guessed it. These were people who tended to be marginalized and impoverished. They were willing to risk whatever reputation they had. They were willing to take on whatever moral weight they needed to in exchange for a simple meal and a few pence. There was no grand reward. There was no high status. The sin eater's task was thankless. And yet it was complex because it was still sacred. And for some, it was about more than just a free meal. It was about easing the worries of those left behind and ensuring that their loved ones would be free to enter the afterlife. We can see this in the case of the last known sin eater, which occurred in Shropshire, England. This is the story of Richard Munslow. Richard was unique among sin eaters because he was neither poor nor was he reviled. He was actually a very well-respected, well-established farmer. His reason for serving his community in the capacity of sin eater was much more personal. When Richard was 30 years old, he and his wife Anne lost their firstborn infant son, George. George was only 3 months old. They did go on to have three more children, but 8 years later, in 1870, in one terrible week, they lost their three other children, one after the other, to scarlet fever. 6-year-old James, 5-year-old Thomas, and 8-month-old Elizabeth. It was believed that this grief that was associated with these tragedies, as well as the desire to protect the spirituality of his lost children, led Richard to serve the local families as a sin eater. But he wasn't viewed as a pariah in his community. On the contrary, when he died in 1906, he was actually buried in a churchyard, which would have been a very rare honor for somebody who had been in that line of work. And to this very day, his grave in St. Margaret Churchyard in Redland Hope, Shropshire, England, continues to be maintained by the community, and his legacy lives on. These customs speak to the inner cultural human desire to ease the transition between life and death, and to ensure that the dead and those who are left behind can freely move on without the weight of unresolved issues. So you could say that these sentiments are tied to legacy, and that's what I want to shift to next. The idea of legacy is something that we all grapple with. So most of us have a tendency to think about how will we be remembered or what will we leave behind. The sin eater's role was to clear the slate for the dead, allowing them to move on unencumbered by shame or by guilt. And that's not unlike how we think about legacy today. Many of us want to leave a legacy of love, kindness, accomplishment, things of that nature. But sometimes, as we approach the end of life, there are things that we wish that we could have done differently, things that we wish that we could undo, and there's a weight to those kinds of things, something that we have to carry. And that resonates deeply with me, that idea of there being a weight that somebody has to carry. This is where we begin to shift from the historical to the modern day, and I want to share a comparison that speaks to me in the work that I do as a death doula. As I was researching this episode, I began to realize that the work that death doulas do is somewhat akin to sin eaters, but we're more what I would call worry eaters. So just kind of stick with me here. So much like a sin eater took on the spiritual burdens of the dead, today, death doulas take on the worries and the anxieties of the dying and their families. Part of our job is to shoulder the concerns so that our clients can focus on what truly matters, which for a lot of people is spending time with their loved ones or reflecting on their lives and also being prepared emotionally for the situation that they find themselves in. So we aren't going around absorbing sins, but we are absorbing fears, doubts, and the endless what-if questions. We absorb worries, hence worry eaters. As we take on these emotional and logistical burdens, we help to create space for something more meaningful, space for connection, for closure, for peace. So just as the sin eaters ritual allowed the deceased to rest without the weight of sin, we strive to help people live their final days without the weight of excessive worry. And for the family or the loved ones, death doulas can take on the details that can just be overwhelming in these really fragile last moments, and we can allow the loved ones to just focus on being present. While the ritual of sin eating may have disappeared from our cultural practices, the underlying principle still lingers. In the end, whether it's sin or worries, we all need somebody who can help carry the load. And that, I think, is really what the legacy of the sin eater was. It wasn't just about absorbing sin. It was about easing the transition between life and death, making sure that what needed to be said or done was completed. In my work, I try to embody that same ethos, to be a worry eater for those in need so that they can live and leave well. There you have it, friends. That is the story of sin eaters, a story and a legacy that is grim and fascinating and deeply tied to human need. And I hope that it gives you something to think about, whether you're reflecting on your own legacy or considering how you might be able to lighten the emotional load or burden for somebody else. When we carry the burdens of others, whether in our families or in our relationships, we leave behind a legacy of peace and love, a legacy that truly matters. Thank you for joining me for the season 3 kickoff of the Death Becomes Her podcast. You can find me, Layella Kelly, on Instagram at LeavingWellDeathDoula, or you can find me on my website, www.leavingwellmt.com. And remember, talking about death won't kill you. I promise.